Arizona sports. The local sports leader. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset.
As always, it's busy around here. We got a lot going on, so we turn things over to Mitch so he can get us caught up on what's going on in sports. It is the 4 o'clock reset. Take it away, Mitch.
You want to push the button today, Burnsy?
Sure, I'll push it.
Here we go.
I've got a high level of respect for him. Kevin's going to be a head coach in this league very soon.
That, the voice of Frank Vogel, dating back June 6th of 2023, when Frank Vogel was introduced as the new Suns head coach, asked about the role that Kevin Young was going to play, as he was a big piece that was kept on staff after Monty Williams' departure. We lead with that because today, Kevin Young is now officially the BYU basketball head coach, replacing Mark Pope. I will point out, however, Gambo, and you guys are well aware, Kevin Young is going to be a part of the Suns staff through their entire postseason run before departing to BYU.
Yes, I double-checked with the Suns on this today, and I was told exactly that, that he will be with the team through the playoffs. Nothing will change until after the playoffs are over.
I got the impression that this is very much a dream-type job for Kevin Young. He's got ties to that university. He's got ties to that state, that this job is a big deal kind of job for him to be able to have. So while it might seem to some like, hey, he's not going to be an NBA head coach here, he's not going to be an NBA head coach there, I think this opening in particular was one that really, really appealed to him because of his family connections to that university. And so for that, it's going to be an unusual coaching situation for the Suns next year because a lot of it's going to be dependent on what happens this year. And obviously Kevin Young's not going to be a part of that. But for him personally, I think this was a job that he, when it became available, very, very much wanted because of what it meant for him.
Frank Vogel said it was more like a domino effect today. He has one person that he blamed at his media availability today.
This whole carousel started with another good friend of mine, Andy Enfield, leaving USC. You know, someone I worked with way back in Boston. I live a mile from in Manhattan Beach. You know, he's a good friend of mine, and then he leaves USC, and that led to Kevin Young leaving. You know, after five other jobs getting filled, like Andy Enfield caused this whole thing.
It's your fault, Andy. Your fault.
Well, the Jazz owner, Ryan Smith, who will now own the Coyotes, and Danny Ainge were both influential in the hiring. Smith is going to pay some of Young's salary, and he's going to put a lot of money into that program over the next couple of years. They want BYU to be competitive in the Big 12, so he can recruit right away. He's got to put together a roster. So they've got a lot of guys that haven't decided whether they're going to play next year. They lost their best recruit, a kid named Colin Chandler that went to Kentucky. So he's going to have to hit the transfer portal right away, but he can start recruiting is what I've heard.
Look, my immediate takeaway is there anything else that Ryan Smith has on his Arizona-related shopping list? This is a little absurd.
He's coming after you, Mitch.
Seriously, before you know it, Mitch is going to be working at KSL in Salt Lake City. Exactly. Bye, Mitch. He's coming for you.
At least I would still be in the family. Come on. Other NBA news. Tonight, we've got not one, but two play-in games, both of the Western Conference ones. Lakers at Pelicans at 4:30. That's only a half hour from now. And then Warriors at Kings at 7. Pick the winners of just the two games tonight.
It's going to be the Lakers, and it's going to be the Warriors.
So then you're thinking Pels Warriors for the 8th seed.
Yeah, but I'm
Pelicans.
Rooting.
Pelicans win tonight.
Ooh.
Okay.
Warriors beat Sacramento.
And okay. That would set up Warriors-Lakers for the 8.
Yeah.
Which is just tasty.
I'm rooting for the Pelicans, but I think the Lakers will win tonight.
I think we can safely say we're all rooting for not the Lakers tonight. I think that's a safe bet.
Probably. You're probably right about that. Yes.
Other basketball news. One of the faces of Lob City with the Clippers during that late 2000s era, Blake Griffin officially announced he is done with his NBA career this morning.
It was an interesting career. It was a very interesting Lob City with DeAndre Jordan and Chris Paul and Blake. I mean, that was a lot of fun basketball at the time. Didn't lead to a lot of, didn't lead to championships and a lot of success in the playoffs, but it was a fun brand of basketball to watch.
Yeah, it was. It didn't always live up to the hype in terms of success, but he certainly was. There was a stretch where he was one of the most entertaining players in the league. One of those you can't turn away or walk away when he's on because you might miss something spectacular. Yeah.
You would have just hoped that he would have been a little bit more healthy, unfortunately. The injuries just kind of got the best of him. Rough one yesterday for the Diamondbacks.
The 0-1. In the dirt, it skips away from Moreno to the right. And now rounding third, trying to score is Horner. The throw to the plate is not in time. Cubs tie it on a wild pitch.
And then from there, they went on to lose in 11 innings. So two things I hope for tonight out of the Diamondbacks. One, a win. That feels obvious. And two, enough of these home runs to Michael Busch. He has one in five straight now. This is ridiculous.
That was my key to the game yesterday.
It was.
That was my key to the game.
Michael Busch is hitting a lot of home runs. Don't let him hit a home run.
Former Dodger, by the way. So just another indirect way to torment us, I guess.
Score more runs late in these games. They're putting so much pressure on themselves, so much pressure on their bullpen. I understand that no team in baseball has more losses from their bullpen than the Diamondbacks do, but I don't think it's just fair to say that's the bullpen's fault. There has been so little run support late in these games. I feel like that's been the defining trait of this team if we're looking for a fault so far this season. They just don't score from the seventh inning on. It's a real challenge for them.
Man. Got to do something about that. Yeah, maybe make the game six innings?
There you go. Just call it after six innings. We're done, right?
Can we add like mercy rule if the Diamondbacks score a bunch of runs in the early innings? Yeah, maybe exactly. That'll help too. How about some NFL draft talk? Peter Schrager, well known with NFL Network, of course, he dropped his first mock draft. And he projects the Cardinals to trade back with the Giants and then take Roma Dunze at the sixth spot. Here's his reasoning for the Giants trading up. Merely a mock draft, but I could see this deal coming to fruition. Joe Schoen, the Giants GM, didn't draft Daniel Jones. J.J. McCarthy, who he has going at four, checks a lot of boxes. And Big Blue can get out of Jones' contract after this upcoming season. To stay or not to stay? Monty Austin Fort. Is this something that the Cardinals should consider, though?
That's the question we ask of thee, to be or not to be.
He is projecting. Yeah, Schrager is projecting that the Cardinals would get an extra third this year and an extra second next year to move down two spots. You'd still get one of the top three wide receivers, obviously. Top two wide receivers, yeah, the way things would go. I don't have the audio yet in front of me. I was going to send it to everybody tomorrow, but I did see on Twitter, that Adam Schefter this morning on their ESPN draft special talked about the Giants, and he said, quote, "The Giants say they have other needs, but their actions tell another story. They've put in a lot of work in the quarterbacks," close quote.
Mm.
So this idea of the Giants maybe getting a little antsy and moving up from six might be based in a little bit of reality, and Schrager might not be that far off when he suggests that maybe the Giants. I guess the question would be, is that enough for the Cardinals to get to move down two spots, an extra third, an extra second? That's what we'd all have to ask ourselves.
Good picks. Remember, second-round picks are supposed to be starters. Third-round picks are supposed to be, you know, good role players that can start or could be good depth guys. I mean, it all depends on how much you love the top two wide receivers, because you're still going to get one of the top two. If you've got them rated very, very equally, why not add the second and third rounder?
And then you know what they say about seventh round picks. They become just 3 points short of winning a Super Bowl. I think that's the expression there. I don't know if you guys, by the way, saw the social media exchange between Buda Baker and Paris Johnson yesterday.
I did.
So Buda initially tweets out, for those who have not seen, "Rome equals WR1, hashtag go dogs, that is all." Obviously backing his fellow Husky Roma Dunze. To which Paris replied, "That's a funny way to spell Marvin's name, .. LOL, hashtag go Bucks." Buda has since slightly recanted earlier today, saying, "Bugatti Marv equals WR1, wake up haters, that is all."
No love for Malik Neighbors? No LSU guys?
No LSU guys on the
Cardinals roster who's
planted
a flag for...
No, they took all Clemson guys. That was the
Malik
Tigers
Neighbors.
They took.
Yeah. Damn. Yeah, right?
No LSU guys on a roster?
I'm sure there are a few, but I mean none that are like high profile. I can't think of any high profile
none that
LSU
immediately
players on the Cardinals roster. I can't think of any. There might be one, but I'm not sure who it is. Anyway, fun. Fun when the players snip at each other like that.
Fun little banter. And then I want to close with this, because the biggest kept secret in women's basketball became reality yesterday. Caitlin Clark drafted first overall in the WNBA draft. This audio that I'm about to play is from a week ago. Diana Taurasi on with Scott Van Pelt. It's a good 30 seconds. She thinks that Caitlin Clark is in wake of a reality check.
Reality is coming. Okay.
You know, there's levels to this thing, and that's just life. We all went through it.
Of course.
And you see it on the NBA side, and you're going to see it on this side, where, you know, you look superhuman playing against 18-year-olds, but you're going to come with some grown women that have been playing professional basketball for a long time. Not saying that it's not going to translate, because when you're great at what you do, you're just going to get better. But there is going to be a transition period where you're going to have to give yourself some grace as a rookie. And, you know, it might take a little bit longer for some people.
Any truth to what DT's thrown out there?
I'm sure there is.
No, I don't know. I mean, there's been a lot of NBA players that are coming in as rookies and dominated the league. Just look at Victor Wembanyama playing against grown men instead of 18-year-olds.
Well,
right there,
he feels like an extreme example, right?
But isn't Caitlin Clark an extreme example? I mean, given the success that she, couldn't we argue that Caitlin Clark is just as an extreme example as Victor Wembanyama? I don't know.
That's
we'll see. Thanks, Campbell.
I didn't mean to sass you. I'm sorry.
That Indiana team won 5 games 2 years ago, and then I think they went to 13 games, won 12 or 13 this year, and is it feeling like they'll be a playoff team this year with what they've done by adding?
I'm just going to say this, and I just saw the story cross my tweet deck here a second ago. The CEO of Fanatics said that Caitlin Clark had the highest selling jersey on draft night of any athlete in any sport in the history of the company. That to me is, like, more people went out and bought her jersey on draft night than a guy in the NFL who had gotten drafted, somebody in the NBA who had gotten drafted. On the night of the draft, nobody sold more jerseys than she did. This story is just beginning in terms of her ability to grow the popularity of that sport. Now that it's at this different level, I can't wait to see how it translates and how it grows and what it means for the WNBA game, because that blew me away, that little nugget that I read right there.
That is interesting.
And that is your 4 o'clock reset.
Thanks, Mitch. We appreciate it. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, maybe it's the key to the series, maybe it's not. Can the Suns bottle up Anthony Edwards again? That's next on the Burns and Gambo show.
D-backs, Cubs. Don't miss pregame coverage of Game 2 of the series tonight at 6 on Arizona Sports 98.7 and the Arizona Sports app.
Anthony Edwards after the game this past weekend against the Suns.
Those games over with. So, you know, it's a whole different game now. The refs can't call those fouls that they call them, so it's going to be a lot tougher.
It's always the referee. It's always the referee.
It's going to be tougher. They can't call those fouls.
I was looking back at some of the cut-ups of some of his plays against the Suns in the 3 games this year. Man, we get annoyed sometimes with Devin Booker begging for fouls. Man, you should have seen Anthony Edwards in some of those games. He was begging for a call in a couple of those games, like every single trip down the floor, it felt like.
It's my least favorite part of the NBA is all the begging for calls that everybody does on every single play. It's like, oh my God, just play.
Yeah.
They didn't make the call. Like, they're not going to change. You know what? Hey, because you're complaining, I'm going to actually reverse it. You were right. Like, that doesn't happen. Stop complaining about stuff that you can't change.
Yeah, well, this Anthony Edwards matchup, it's certainly one of the keys to this whole series, which starts on Saturday. 3 games against the Suns this year, Anthony Edwards is shooting 31%. He's 13 of 42. He has totaled 43 points against the Suns in 3 games this year. Ooh. And that is one of, if not the biggest question of the series. Can the Suns continue to do that to him? And that's a lot of the predictions you're reading on the series are kind of based in that. You know, this idea that they might somehow have figured out a way to bottle up Anthony Edwards.
Well, if they do, they're going to win. If they do, he's one of 11 players that's going to play for Team USA at the 2024 Summer Olympics in Paris. Like, he's that good of a player. 2 years ago today was his playoff debut. 2 years ago today, his first NBA playoff game. 36 points, 6 assists, 2 blocks, 52% from the field, 3rd most points ever in a playoff debut. 2 years ago today. That was Anthony Edwards' playoff debut. 36 points. He was great. The Suns have done a great job. If they're able to continue that and bottle him up, they're going to win. Like, your best players have to play well to win. I'm a big believer in that. Best player, he's their best player. he has to play well. If he doesn't play well, they're not going to win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and that's why this series, we talked a lot yesterday. It was Monday, and it was our first chance to talk about the series. We talked a lot yesterday about how this is a good matchup for the Phoenix Suns, how this is the preferred matchup for the Phoenix Suns because of the way they've played during the regular season and the way the Suns seem to be equipped to handle the Minnesota Timberwolves. That changes on a dime if Anthony Edwards starts doing Anthony Edwards things. I really believe that this whole, you know, we're gonna rue the day that we wanted to see the Minnesota Timberwolves, or like when Kellen was in here with us earlier, how right. We kind of felt like the Suns a couple of years ago had Dallas's number because of the way they played him in the regular season and the way they started that series. And we were wrong. We were dead wrong about that series a few years ago. I think Anthony Edwards, Gambo, is the guy who can make us all rue the day we ever rooted for the Suns to play the Minnesota Timberwolves because he's fantastic. And I don't know if you can sit there and be sure you've bottled him up or you figured out how to slow him down.
1 week ago today, he scored 51 points in a basketball game. 51. A week ago. Tuesday, April 9th against Washington. 17 out of 29 from the field. 6 three-pointers. 51 points. We know how good he is. We know how dominant he is. But man, they've got something on him. They've got they have confidence that they can shut him down and stop him the way they defend him. He was not able to get to the basket against Phoenix. I mean, he's got great footwork, but he was not able to get to the basket. He likes to drive and score, and the Suns took that away from him. If they take it away from him again, it's going to lead to a Suns victory.
Yeah, Frank Vogel from practice today talked a little bit about keeping that defensive integrity consistent against Minnesota.
We all understand the threat that he carries, what kind of player he is. But it's not just about Ant. The gaps are about whoever is the ball. If Cat and Nas or Conley or any of those guys are looking to attack the paint, we want to have a heavy gap presence, and then when the ball moves, we want to fire out of that and contest threes or prevent threes, so it's just part of being a connected multiple effort defense, hopefully we're much stronger with those habits today than we were at the beginning of the season.
I tell you what, if the previous matchups mean anything at all, and you do watch some of the highlights of how the Suns defend Anthony Edwards, it really does mess up the entire Minnesota offense. I mean, it is amazing to watch some of the video of it, and Kellen has posted quite a bit of the video of it at ArizonaSports.com, where you see that it's like truly cutting off the head of the snake. And the success the Suns have had defensively against Minnesota this year, it is all started with that, their ability to confuse Anthony Edwards, too. And you asked Kellen this earlier. I think he gets frustrated playing the Phoenix Suns. I think they have definitely, I don't want to say gotten inside his head a little bit, but certainly with ways they defend him, when he's not getting those calls, it leads to bad plays, bad shots, a little hero ball, some turnovers. It feels like the Suns have frustrated Anthony Edwards this year.
Yeah, you mentioned he scored 43 points, I think you said.
Total in three games, yes.
Right. On 42 shots.
Yeah.
He's got 43, because His field goal percentage against everybody else is like 46. His field goal percentage against the Suns is like 31. So, and then you look at the assist to turnover ratio. He's got as many turnovers as he does assists when he's playing the Suns. So he's not able to create. I mean, it was incredible watching the Minnesota Timberwolves turn the ball over as much as they did in that game against Phoenix the other day. But he's got 10 turnovers against Phoenix and only like 10 or 11 assists. So he has really struggled against them. They do a great job of just clogging everything up and taking away the lanes for him to drive and get to the spots that he likes to be. And listen, for a great, every great scorer has places they like to be on the court and score. Booker does, Durant does, Chris Paul does, and Anthony Edwards does too, but the Suns have done a great job of taking that away from him.
Yeah, they have. We've got the Burns and Gambo Show podcast. You can subscribe right now on your iPhone or your Android. Works like every podcast you love to listen to. We'll digitally deliver you the show every single day. The Burns and Gambo Show podcast brought to you by Carol Has the Buyers, your home sold guaranteed realty. When we come back, Kevin Durant did something this year that he has not done in a while. We'll tell you what it is coming up here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, everybody, Dan Bickley here. Will our Diamondbacks rebound against the Cub? We'll discuss tomorrow starting at 6 a.m. on Arizona Sports.
The 0-1.
In the dirt, it skips away from Moreno to the right. And now rounding third, trying to score is Horner. The throw to the plate is not in time. Cubs tie it on a wild pitch.
All right, scheduled to talk about the Suns here, and we're going to, but give us 30 seconds so we can update you on what's going on with Gabriel Moreno, because it would appear that that wild pitch uncorked by Kevin Ginkle last night did more than just tie the game in the ninth inning. It would appear that that wild pitch got Gabriel Moreno scratched from today's game against the Cubs with a right thumb contusion from that wild pitch last night. So he bruised his thumb when the ball hit him in the hand. Torey Lovello said after the game, and you were there, Gambo, that based off a previous experience, Gabby expected the ball to go one way and it went the other, which is why it took him so long to pick it up and why the runner scored from second. But he is not in the lineup today for the Diamondbacks because of a contusion on his thumb from that wild pitch.
Wow.
Here we go with the injuries again for the Diamondbacks. Here we go.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's last year. They were relatively healthy the majority of the year. Couple of, you know, injuries, lingering injuries, but not like this. This is tough. So you don't have your starting center fielder in the game today. You don't have your starting shortstop. You don't have your starting catcher. Like, this is tough.
Yeah, given that teams are built up the middle, right, defensively, right. And you want to be strong up the middle. Yeah, it's now hopefully it's not that big of a deal. Hopefully it's a short one, but we keep saying that with all of these injuries. Alec Thomas, hopefully it's not that big of a deal. Well, he's not running the bases yet.
Right.
And Eduardo Rodriguez, it's probably not that big of a deal. It's certainly not why they signed Jordan Montgomery. Oops, we're going to shut him down now. It's initially, you look at these and you go, not a big deal, not a big deal, until you miss Gabriel Moreno for a few games, and then you realize it is a big deal. So that's the latest from the Diamondbacks. He has been scratched from the lineup tonight. Tucker Barnhart has taken his place, and we're going to talk more Diamondbacks baseball coming up here in just a little bit. Kevin Durant, in terms of the number of games that he has played this season, it's the most since the 2018-2019 season with Golden State. In terms of total minutes, it's the most Kevin Durant has played in a season in 10 years. You have to go back to the 2013-14 Oklahoma City Thunder to find a season in which he played as many minutes total, not per game, but total, as he did this year. He might have paid for it a little bit at the end of the season, which is why, Gambo, getting him all this rest at the end is so essential for them to get out of this play-in tournament.
Yeah, you'd rather have it than not, but here's the reality. He never missed more than three games this season with an injury. He never missed four games in a row, five games in a row, a week, 2 weeks. The most he ever missed was three. So that was good. I mean, there was a column, I think, on AZ Central, might have been Dwayne Ranker, where he said, I'm just staying away from the crash dummies, the dudes who try to sell calls and don't mind hurting people by diving on the floor trying to sell a call. I know who those guys are, and I try to stay away from them. That was a great line. Like, okay, I've learned, like, some guys are going to try to roll into you and dive on the ball. I'm going to stay away from that stuff. He stayed healthy. Played a lot of minutes, played a lot of games, going to get some rest now, because now is going to be the grind. I mean, when your schedule comes out and, you know, you start to go through the gauntlet here, there's a lot of, like, every other day games that you're going to be playing. And if you're going to go far in the playoffs, you know, you're talking about average six games a series. If you get to the NBA Finals, you're talking about 24 games in about 50 days.
I was just thinking to myself, too, it's such a fine line in this. Because think about where we were a year ago with Kevin Durant, right? Suns had just gotten him. He missed all that time because he rolled his ankle in pregame warmups. And if nothing else, we thought, okay, he's going to be fresh. He's missed a lot of times this year. His legs should be fresh. He should be good to go with energetic. But because he had missed so much time, and because they had missed so much time together figuring out how this works, they were trying to kind of make it up on the fly. You know, they were trying to figure things out and rotations on the fly and who's going to play here and who's going to play there. There's a balance between wanting fresh legs going into this time of the season, but last year it was a little too extreme. This year, it's just the opposite. Kevin Durant has been remarkably durable this year in ways that, I'll be honest, I don't think any of us ever expected him to play this many regular season games, just given his history. It's greatly benefited them, but boy, I hope he's taking it real easy this week and just relaxing and getting his sleep and getting his body right, because, brother, you ain't lying. That grind, that playoff grind, it is coming for Kevin Durant, and I hope physically he's ready for it, because I think he definitely got worn down by the end of the year.
Well, I mean, if you just look at April as a whole and the games they played in April, he shot 46.5% from the field and 33.3% from three-point range. Those numbers are way down to what his season averages are. You know, his season averages, he shot 52.3% from the field, 41.3% from three. So he was not putting up statistically the numbers that he had all year long in the final month of the season.
Boy,
now
you ain't lying. I looked at his splits for the season.
Go ahead.
Whoo, man! I mean, it was a drop off. I mean, it was a pronounced drop off towards the end, where his field goal percentage, his 3-point percentage, just took big hits over the last few weeks of the season compared to where they were when he started the year.
Well, look at the minutes in April. He played more minutes in April than in any other month this whole season. The most minutes he played in a month average was the month he played 41 against New Orleans, 38 against New Orleans, 40 against the Clippers, 42 against Sacramento, 38 against Minnesota, 38.3. That's why this rest is so important for him to get some days. Just let your body relax, let your body recover, get some sleep, get some rest, because he needed it. Now, you know, they're also going to remember, like, he's going to play 40 minutes a game in the postseason.
Of course. Yeah.
This isn't like 35, like, unless you're blowing a team out in any close basketball game, he's not going to come off the court for that much. He's got to play 40, 41 minutes a game, 42 minutes a game in these playoff games.
Yeah, no, and I don't want him coming off the, I mean, this is the time of year where you do it. This is the time of year where Devin Booker plays 40 minutes, where Kevin Durant plays 41 minutes, where Bradley Beal plays 38 or 39 minutes. This is the moment for that. I hope, you know, and I think when it's all said and done, this is where those fourth quarters, this is where those blown leads, this is where their inability to finish off teams, you just hope it doesn't bite them now. You know, you just hope they don't, like a credit card bill, you hope that they don't pay for that now by having tired basketball players who didn't get a chance to trim minutes. And to be honest with you, in having a team that was so concerned about staying out of the play-in tournament, rightfully so, that they didn't feel like they could give their guys a load management day. You know, Kevin Durant couldn't, they just couldn't afford to do it. Devin Booker couldn't afford to have a load management game in there. Everything was just too nip and tuck for this basketball team. That's life for this basketball team.
Yeah, no, I mean, we could talk about the importance of being able to play a team like Minnesota. You've had their number, but the most important thing is not having to play tonight. You know, and that's not that you can't have success coming out of the play-in tournament, because we've seen teams do it. Miami last year, the Lakers last year. So it can happen. But this team, more than like any other team, needed the ability to get to the 5 days of rest before they play Minnesota. And then you've just, you know, I don't worry about the minutes for Booker. I don't worry about the minutes for Bradley Beal. I probably worry about it a little bit for Nurkic and for Kevin Durant the most. Especially Durant, like more, because you're going to rely on him so much, and he's going to play 41 minutes a game, and the age and the wear and the tear and the high minutes this year.
Yeah.
But, you know, they have other guys that could take some of the pressure off Durant, too, now that they didn't have just a couple weeks ago with the emergence of Beal.
The most games that Yusuf Nurkic has played in a season since 2017-18 with Portland. So it's been 6 years since he's played as many games as he did this year. It was one of the big concerns with him coming in. He had averaged about 49 games per season. The last three with Portland, he played 76 this year. We asked him about that when he was on the show a little bit earlier. Enter to win an exclusive NFL draft experience. Just text the word draft to 62620 to enter for the chance to win a reserved table and $200 in food and beverage credit at Flanker's Kitchen and Sports Bar. It's inside the BetMGM Sportsbook, all while you'll have a front row seat for our live broadcast as we await the Cardinals' first pick. Text the word draft to 62620 right now. When we come back, the Diamondbacks bullpen starting to show the cracks, or is something else the cause for the late inning situations for the Diamondbacks? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Social Poll,
presented by Sanderson Ford.
All right, Mitch is here. He's got today's social media poll question of the day. Did we? Oh, we didn't do it earlier.
right? Did we do it earlier?
We did not.
Yes, that's why we played the open as opposed to the...
That's right, because we had Bryce Jarvis on. Oh. What the hell's the question? What are we asking people today? I have no idea. What's going on?
Let's see. Let's pull it up here. Oh, yeah. This is the question. It has to do with how quickly you jump to judgment when it comes to the baseball season. That's kind of the setup for this question.
Okay.
At what point in the Diamondbacks season will you become concerned with how the team is performing? There's four options. Now, after the month of April, halfway through the month of May, or any time at the end of May or beyond is when you will become concerned.
To infinity and beyond.
I'll take that as the answer D.
You know, with all the teams that make the playoffs now, if you hang around 500, you're probably still in this thing in late July. You got teams that deal with injuries like the Diamondbacks. You just got to keep your head afloat till you get teams back.
Yeah.
Till you get guys back. So I'm not really that worried about it.
Yeah, I'm going to vote. I'm definitely going to vote for May and beyond because I think normally our rule on this show has been about 40 games before you start to judge a baseball team. I think last year's team proved to us that in today's Major League Baseball, I don't know if 40 games is enough. I don't know if 40 games is enough to be able to say, I know who this team is. I know what they're about. I know what they're capable of, given how much parity there is and how easy it is to kind of do what the Diamondbacks did a year ago. So put me down for May and beyond. I'm not going to, as long as they don't drastically fall out of things and really like stumble and humiliate themselves, I think they're fine. I think they're fine playing 500 baseball, and I won't get too worried about it until after Memorial Day.
Yeah. 43% are willing to be as patient as the both of you. They're saying wait until the end of May or beyond before you start concerning yourself with the performance. 35% say first 2 months, that'll give us a good gauge of how the team's doing. 12% say now, right now, leaving 10% waiting until the end of April.
Now, come on. Come on. Relax, everybody.
12%?
April? That's 2 weeks from now. Without two starting pitchers.
You just went full Aaron Rodgers there, Burns.
R-E-L-A-X.
Relax.
Yeah, it's April 16th. We're not going to get freaked out about this team on April 30th.
What does Devin Booker say? We say chilling.
We're just chilling. Yeah, we're chilling. We're just chilling. All right, that's the poll question. You can find it on X, the artist formerly known as Twitter. Last night, the Diamondbacks, and again, repeating the news from the Diamondbacks, Gabriel Moreno, a late scratch with a contusion, a bruise, basically, of his thumb that was suffered last night during that wild pitch, the one that Kevin Ginkle uncorked, the one that allowed the tying run to score, and ultimately the Cubs won the game in extra innings. You have a moment like that. You see that the Arizona Diamondbacks have 4 blown saves. You see that the Arizona Diamondbacks bullpen has 6 losses and that no team in baseball has more than that out of their bullpen. And immediately it kind of sparks this, the bullpen. What's wrong with the bullpen? There's got to be something wrong with the bullpen. Then you look at the ERAs of the other two teams that have as many bullpen losses as the Diamondbacks do.
Astros and Marlins.
Yeah,
right?
the Astros and Marlins, their bullpen ERAs are over 6. The Diamondbacks are like at 3.5. Their bullpen ERA does not suggest that it's the problem. There's something else going on here, Gambo, and I tend to believe it's the late inning offensive execution of the Diamondbacks.
You're right, because look at the one-run games there. Look at the amount of one-run baseball games the Diamondbacks have played in. I think they played in 6. They've lost like 5 of them. You know, if your offense isn't executing, your bullpen can pitch 6 innings of scoreless baseball and then give up a run, and then you lose the game. Or 4 innings of scoreless baseball and then give up a run. Or 3. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I mean, if you're not going to score runs in close baseball games, your bullpen gives up 1 run, you lose maybe the bullpen overall 4 or 5 innings, 1 run allowed, and you end up taking a loss, but the ERA is really good. That's what we're seeing right now with this Diamondback team.
Yeah, the Diamondbacks, Marlins, and Astros all have 6 losses out of their bullpen. The Marlins bullpen ERA is 6.01. The Astros is 5.45. The Diamondbacks is 3.43. It's just like, how do they, and that's the reason why they get there. They get there because the Diamondbacks offense is one of the worst in baseball. It's scoring runs in the 7th inning or later. You look at last night, the Diamondbacks, after Corbin Carroll got the go-ahead hit in the 8th, The Diamondbacks went 0-9 in that game, and they had plenty of opportunities in the 10th to win it, in the 11th to tie it and send it back to the 12th inning, and they couldn't deliver on any of those. And who has to wear something like that? The bullpen has to wear something like that. The bullpen last night, considering that the ghost runner scoring doesn't count as an earned run, the Diamondbacks bullpen last night gave up one earned run in six innings pitched. They struck out six. You'll take that every day out of your bullpen. You got no problem with that when it comes to your bullpen. You just got to give them some run support. The Diamondbacks haven't been doing that. It's been a problem.
That is the problem, right? If the offense is doing well, you know, the difference between – that's why sometimes the win and the loss record isn't as important as it used to be. Because you could pitch four scoreless, you know, four innings and give up one run and win, or four innings and give up one run and lose. And right now, with the offense struggling to score runs, especially late in games, you know, that's what we're seeing. Now, you know, some guys were off to really slow starts, you know, Corbin Carroll being one of them. Look, they intentionally walked Ketel Marte to get to Corbin Carroll last night.
To the rookie of the year in the National League from a year ago, right?
They intentionally walked Ketel Marte and said, we'll take our chances. Now, he delivered, but he's not off to a good start. But look, you know, Paul Goldschmidt was notorious for getting off to slow starts. Like, oh, and then in the end, he would hit his 30 to 35 homers and drive in 90 to 100 runs and, you know, have the 280 batting average. So, for Corbin Carroll, it's just he's off to a slow start. It'll come around. There's too many good offensive players on this team for that not to happen.
All right, before we give the bullpen a complete pass, because they obviously don't deserve a complete pass. There have been guys down there looking at you, Scott McGuff, who have not quite gotten the job done this year, right?
He's terrible.
He might be the new Mikel Castro for you, Gambo.
Castro put two guys on last night, then got out of it, but it was still like, oh, geez.
Yeah, but
time he pitches, I get scared.
McGuff he might be the new Castro. But before we completely take them off the hook, how comfortable do we feel with Kevin Ginkle as the closer for now? Because he has provided some, you know, the wild pitch, say what you will. The only reason that wild pitch was an issue was because the first two guys got on against Ginkle. What's our comfort level right now with him closing these games? It can't be super high, is it?
No. I mean, uncorked a wild pitch in the tying run score. He blew a save on a wild pitch with a guy scored from second yesterday. No, they're better suited when Ginkle's the eighth inning guy. Listen, you can say whatever you want. The last three outs of the game are different than the previous three outs. The last three outs are just different. That's, you know, the mindset is everything's different about it. So it's not the same. The guy that pitches the ninth inning is, you know, you've got to be a little bit mentally stronger and tougher. I mean, Mariano Rivera was the greatest ever, and Trevor Hoffman and Lee Smith, and, you know, we could go through all the great closers. I think Ginkle could be a closer, but he's got a lot more work to do to become a closer and go through those situations. Because, again, it's just, for some reason, getting that final three outs of the baseball game is completely different than previous outs in a game.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, we will turn our attention back to the Suns and the Minnesota Timberwolves, and we'll focus specifically on Frank Vogel. How much this series is going to depend on him and the decisions that he makes. That's coming up here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.